This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Sharad Kutan and Julian Ng here with me, taking a look at the business headlines around the world today. Davos 2017 will kick off tomorrow. That's the 47th WEF, the World Economic Forum annual meeting, will be held in the Swiss ski resort of Davos from tomorrow till Saturday. And it's likely that Trump's anti-establishment rhetoric and leadership style could dominate discussions there.
I think people are afraid. That is, people, when I say people, I mean the people behind WEF are afraid of the wave of populism that's capturing the world's imagination right now. In fact, pushing people like Trump to the pinnacle of power. And this is really trying to recognize going to the heart of what the WEF is doing, whether they're doing things that benefit the world, because we are seeing here some of the greatest inequalities right now after the financial crisis. So I think at the heart of what they are questioning right now is whether capitalism can survive into the future.
But this is essentially a talk shop, right? Davos is a meeting of people who might be policymakers, who might be decision makers in their own right. But it's not a forum for decisions to be made. It is, in fact, an exchange of ideas, right?
But Jules, isn't Davos a gathering of like the most atas people in the world, the richest and most influential people? I feel like it's a bit rich coming from them to talk about inequality.
Well, rich is the right word, because when you attend these meetings, you will get a chance to sample some of the rarest wine vintages around and also sip some many glasses of champagne, because the entry fee is about 135 Swiss francs, which works out, not 135, but $50,000 US. Just to attend, you got to pay $50,000 US. The owner of, or at least the people behind what they feel is a non-profit organization, says that there is no plans to dismantle WEF, because over the years, revenue has been up 45% over the last 5 years. And they're paying some of their employees. I mean, if you guys think you're qualified and you want to apply for a job with the WEF, the going salary is about 135,000 Swiss francs, which works out to be about $135,000 US.
Well, I think the paradox has been, Melissa, just answering your question, right? Is it rich for people who have power and money to be talking about inequality? I think it's, in fact, always been the case. And it's precisely those who have taken the lead who recognize that it's not beneficial for the world as a whole to have these kinds of disparities of wealth and power. So you have efforts made by Bill Gates, the Mr. Ambani from India, who've all come to recognize this is a problem, that growth itself is going to be affected. So there is some form of enlightened self-interest, to use that phrase by Alexis de Tocqueville, for rich people and powerful people to talk about equalizing situation. I don't think we can sort of say, use that ad hominem argument against rich people and say, well, just because you're rich, you don't have a right to speak about the poor. In fact, they often have, sometimes in terms of charity, sometimes in terms of trying to make structural changes.
Well, I guess you got to question whether it's all just talk or whether what they talk about results in something, right? Because this thing has been going on for 46, 47 years. This is the 47th meetup in Davos. And, one of the very prominent speakers there, current Harvard professor and ex-chief economist of the IMF, says that Kenneth Rogoff says that the conventional wisdom of Davos is always wrong. And quote unquote, no matter how improbable the event most likely to happen, is the opposite of whatever the Davos consensus is. So he's talking about Brexit. He's talking about the Trump victory in the US. Really questioning the ability of the people in Davos to keep a pulse of what people are feeling.
Well, also sometimes just because you think what ought to be doesn't happen, does it? I mean, necessarily happen. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, we also have news that Donald Trump says he won't send official representatives. And in fact, people who used to be regular attendees, like former Goldman Sachs president Gary Cohen, says he's going to skip it this year, perhaps, you know, following the kind of Trump view of the world.
Well, this is interesting. Quite busy this week, you know, being inaugurated and all that.
That's right. But this is quite interesting because it's also the first time that a Chinese president, Xi Jinping, would attend for the first time. Oh. So these guys Trump does not want to probably meet face-to-face with Xi Jinping over there. They don't want to bump into each other.
Well, from the Swiss ski slopes, let's move over to the UK, where Prime Minister Theresa May is expected to signal plans for a hard Brexit by saying she's willing to quit the European Union's single market for goods and services to regain control over Britain's borders and laws. So she's willing to withdraw from tariff-free trade with the region in return for the ability to curb immigration.
I think there is a lot of gamble and a wager here, because you've got to sacrifice some degree of economic growth for a degree of national sovereignty. They risk alarming a lot of investors, a lot of bankers, and in fact, they have to deal with a central banker who is deemed to be increasingly activist because Mark Carney, who is the governor of the Bank of England, has come under fire in recent months for being too involved in the Brexit debate. And he's saying that Theresa May appears to be heading us in the direction of a sort of bargain basement economy on the shores of Europe. So Mark Carney, the central bank governor of the Bank of England, is pretty worried about Brexit.
Well, this morning, Tan Chin Han spoke to Stephen Innes of Awanda. He's a forex trader there, and they were looking at the pound sterling, which is expected to move ahead of Theresa May's speech. Now, Stephen Innes said, you know, perhaps, oh, this is a very strong statement expected to come out from the Theresa May camp. Perhaps there's an element of bluffing here. Perhaps there's some element of grandstanding before the Brexit talks actually commence to perhaps get the best deal possible for the UK.
And there's a lot of spinning going around because Theresa May also says that, this is not Theresa May, but believe it or not, they have a Brexit minister. So the quote of the Brexit minister is that we don't want the EU to fail. We want it to prosper politically and economically. And we need to persuade our allies that a strong new partnership with the UK will help the EU. So he's spinning that in a very positive way.
What seems to be center of the demands by Britain, maybe populist demands, is that they have control immigration. That seems to be the central plank for this. And it's a big question, I think, for Britain. How can it, deny free movement of people, at the same time want to have a vibrant economy? And you have constantly reading the papers, the paradox of this policy, you know, resulting in people who've lived and contributed to the British economy in academia, in business and whatever, losing their status and losing their residency in Britain. And so I think Britain's going to have a, you know, the Britons as a people will have to have a hard look at themselves.
I think
it's not, in fact, in their interests.
I think they're really trying to balance out the cost of immigration with the benefits of immigration. Of course, if you look at some of the most advanced economies in the world, like the United States, for example, that's an economy that thrives on immigration. Australia, too. If you look at very close economies, at least to immigration, like Japan, it's kind of struggling now with an kind of aging population. But, you know, it is this whole narrative that the United Kingdom has gone through after the Brexit, where by any standards, the Brexit vote was a landslide, you know, 52 or 53% majority. Right now, they want to frame that narrative, according to the Wall Street Journal, in a way that puts the UK in a kind of positive light. And one of the things that they might do will be to portray the UK as a victim of an unreasonable and vindictive EU.
Play the victim card.
I mean, just the stories that keep coming out on the opposite side of the spectrum of the feel-good stories. Your Canada has just made a former refugee from Somalia the head of immigration. I mean, it basically, wow. This man is now a minister, I believe. And, you know, and it makes you think, right? Why is it that some countries, refugees can come and thrive and be such amazing contributors to that society, whereas in others, they're shunned, hated, vilified, feared?
Yeah. What about here in Malaysia? I mean, we are still trying to deal with this notion of the dependence and the reliance on foreign workers. We are also really struggling with it. Sometimes it results in a lot of resentment on the part of the locals as well. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. I think that's something we're still working out, having that conversation as a society as well. But Jules, can I just come back very quickly to this hard Brexit, soft Brexit issue? I mean, at the start of the year, we were talking about, grey swans and risks for this upcoming year. We thought that a soft Brexit was more likely rather than a hard Brexit, which is essentially, you know, the difference between soft and hard is a hard Brexit is a clean break, right? Whereas a soft Brexit might have some elements of the UK working within the EU framework. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how this conversation, how the narrative suddenly switched so quickly.
Well, maybe they would have to follow what the IMF, the WEF in doing in confronting their existential issues, in the sense that the question is whether they want to acknowledge what's going on in the world right now, the kind of populism that's going on right now. And perhaps the EU would have to confront that and bend to one of the grey swans that was raised by Nomura, which is that the rest of EU actually going the other way around and trying to make it play nice with the UK so that they don't lose touch with what is felt by the majority of the people.
So we have a text message that just came in to say that the US and Australia have controlled immigration and that's all that Britain wants. There you go. All right, 7:46 right now. We'll be back with a look at local business news, including Khazanah's report card. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.